This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm Aaron. I'm told I sounded like dog shit on the first show I did today. I'm hoping I sound a little better now. I'll do my best. Fired up to talk about blood and guts, joined, as always, by my good friend, Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. What's up, Nate?
What's up, Aaron? What's up? Real EE podheads out there, vlog fans, blood and gut maniacs. Aaron, I'll upgrade you to cat shit. I think that's a little better than dog shit. Not quite as foul or stinky or messy.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on the particular animal, I believe.
I don't know. I kind of think as a rule, dog shit is more of a mess. I mean, cats put it in a tray, right? They put it in a litter box.
That's they're like, supposed to, yes.
And then you just let it sit out in your house?
Which is fucked up, right?
Isn't that what people do? So I feel like it has to be less rank than dog shit as a rule is my belief, but I don't have either. So
all right,
somebody here has a dog.
I mean, I have a dog. I have two dogs, and I'll flip it over to another guy with a dog. Don't know if he has any cat. I know he doesn't have cats now, but if he's ever had cats. It's Mike. What's up, Mike? What's your thoughts on cat versus dog feces?
Well, my main thought about cat versus dog feces reminds me of Charles Mingus training his cat to use the toilet. Have y'all ever heard of that?
No.
I have not, but I did see a tutorial for training your cat how to use the toilet video recently.
It was written by Charles Mingus, the jazz musician. Because he trained his cats how to do it. And the whole idea is that you basically take a sheet of cardboard and you have like a small hole and you increase the size of the hole until it's basically a toilet seat. But dog shit is much worse. As someone who has dealt with a fair share of really foul dog shit in recent months, some real just eldritch horror ones that I've seen lately, I think cat shit would be the upgrade, but cat pee worse than dog pee.
I have to look this up because, of course, I have heard of Charles Mingus, I think a contemporary of Miles Davis. I have to see if teaching his cat how to use the toilet ranks important enough to make his Wikipedia. So that's what I'm going to be doing here.
Honestly, thought you meant the kid from Boy Meets World.
Don't know who that is.
Educate yourself.
Wasn't his name Mingus?
Didn't watch.
Fingus or Fergus. I don't know. I watched
Ferguson was Clarissa Explains It All.
Yeah, first one was I'm sorry, I watched the shows like in the day and age that they happen, not revisiting them as an adult person.
All right, so. There we go. Mike says no old wrestling. Glad to have you on the team, Mike.
that kills like half of our Patreon. Mike, what are you talking about, man?
Yeah, no, we have to have that. Sorry. I think it's fuck, it must not be Mingus. I'm on the Boy Meets World Wikipedia. Can somebody tell me?
There are 10 results for cat on Mingus's Wikipedia, but it's like, you know, him calling other jazz musicians cats and not about teaching his cat how to use the toilet.
It was Mingus on Boy Meets World. Mingus with a K. Okay.
Well, it wasn't him either. But yeah, it is doable. You can like construct a kitty litter sort of platform inside your toilet, and you just kind of carve out the kitty litter part of it over time, and then they just learn how to use the toilet. I would recommend doing it if you have a cat and are inclined to do so.
No cats here in the like the car household. Yeah, just dogs.
Yeah, I never have owned a cat. I never will because I have very severe allergies and. Interestingly enough, that's kind of why I ended up with a Labradoodle. But when they do the allergy tests, like they do it on a scale of 0 to 4 on how bad your irritation is. The person that administered my first allergy test said that it was the single worst swelling that they've ever seen with cats. Like it
this,
was
this
like,
is this is a fine piece of Mike lore. Historic cat allergies.
Oh, you know what's my other wild allergy? As we are now all fully vaccinated, and you have to disclose this, cashews.
Hmm, that's too bad. Cashews are good. Good nut.
I discovered this on a plane flight where they gave you nuts, and I did not know this, and my throat started closing up on a transcontinental plane flight.
I've never had cats, but in New York, my roommate's brother had a cat. So when his brother was out of town or whatever, which he traveled for work with some regularity, then we would take care of his cat. And his cat had three legs. So it was very, very nice for a weekend. Just be like, oh, I get a cat, a three-legged cat for a weekend, and then I can get rid of it. It was very pleasant.
Well, if you want to know more about the animals in our lives or our historic allergies, you can follow us on Twitter at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast, please, on the podcast app of your choice. If that's the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and review. And if you want to support the show, the best way to do so is over at patreon.com/everythingelite. An ad-free show this week. Our friend Conrad has just convinced us to join adfreeshows.com. And so that's what we'll be doing this week.
We spent some time at the Conradison, so, you know.
It is. I mean, is it actually a lie? Because they're going to drop in ads, so it's not really true that it's an ad-free show. I'm going to take another point for the five-star match game, because Andrew says in the chat that Miles, Mingus, and Monk were the Holy Trinity of 50 Jazz, so I was correct that Mingus and Miles were contemporaries. That's another point for me. I widened my lead on Aaron Bentley.
Jazz is fake. That's my take.
That's racist.
No, never mind. I don't want to talk about the. I don't want to talk about the Rolling Stone list every week. But that's. I went to the zoo with some friends. I don't know, 2 weekends ago. And
the zoo is having a moment.
It's having a big moment. It's like it feels like a safe thing to do, you know, because it's outside and I don't know. You can hang out with your friends. But I like realized that I have not been doing anything because this friend is also going through the Rolling Stone list. And every time we would like, there would be like a moment of silence. You know, I would be like, so I listened to this album the other day. Like, fuck, man, I got to do something. So I have something more interesting to talk about. So I will not be making further conversation about the Rolling Stone list right now.
And in the meantime, you just leave us in the lurch and we have to talk about wrestling?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
All right, we're going to skip Elite or Delete this week. I didn't tell Nate that, I guess, but we had a Discord production meeting just straight up in the AEW channel in the Discord. I figured, you know, we might as well just talk about Blood and Guts to kick this off. We can throw in what we liked and didn't like and all that good stuff right here up top in the show. So, Nate, I see you kind of preparing the take copter, perhaps. Trying to get it revved up.
I would never infringe on Mike's trademark of the take copter. That's all I am.
I mean, it's gassed up. You're more than willing to take a ride on it. I mean, Aaron's been on it. It's a very lovely vehicle. You do have to hang on the side of it with a bullhorn. Like, that is the problem with the take copter.
I'm a little worried about its flight worthiness, to be honest, just because it doesn't sound like the rotor is going very fast at all. It seems like it's really puttering along there. So I'll do a big show point, big picture, not a take, a proclamation. I'm declaring Nate's AEW roster amnesty for everybody on the AEW roster. This whole show, the ending was a little bit flat, but not a, you know, not a disaster, not an explosion deathmatch dud. But this show felt so hot, and every part of it felt like it was clicking, and the crowd was on fire for the show, even though the entire first hour was taped. They had a good Ethan Page segment on this show, which was heretofore thought impossible, along with Scorpio Sky in there. Sean Spears was like an integral part and held his own in the Blood and Guts match. FTR were working their asses off and bleeding all over the place here. And I just decided we're coming up on Double or Nothing, which is the 2-year anniversary of their first show. Is that right? And I'm declaring Nate's AEW roster amnesty. I'm giving everybody a fresh set of eyes, a fresh crack at the bat. I'm going to open myself to the possibility that Ethan Page can be an entertaining part of the television show, along with the previously mentioned people. Because in the right hands, these people can you know, succeed at high levels. They can be important parts of the story. They can hold their own and perform well in matches and bring something unique or special to the table, even if it's not, you know, being my favorite dude or being a top level main event guy. So that was really my overall show point. Any thoughts on that, I guess, before we do the match?
Delete.
This guy, my take, the heels digger inner, Aaron Bentley. He's digging his heels in.
No, I mean, someone made this point in the Discord, but they're right. That segment was entertaining because of Darby Allin. It had nothing to do with Ethan Page. Ethan Page just happened to be in a Darby Allin segment.
You're right. Except it was the best thing that Ethan Page has done in the company so far in terms of his promo and his performance. Certainly it was better than the matches or the backstage promos or the vlogs. Jesus Christ. It was just a straight ahead yelling at the camera promo where he's like, I fucked you up before and I'm going to fuck you up again. And it was like, oh, he's not putting on this big insincere voice or, you know, being too cute by half with it. He was just, you know, very direct. And for that reason, I was like, hey, that was not cringeworthy. That was entirely fine.
I mean, yeah, that's reasonable. I didn't want to change the channel during his promo, which I guess is so it was certainly better than Scorpio Sky's dog shit promo to start the segment. So he had that going for him. I mean, you know, maybe that's Ethan Page's thought here is like, I am going to look good compared to Scorpio Sky when it comes to promos.
So here's what's confusing about Scorpio Sky's promo is he started off being the Riddler to Sting's Batman, but Sting, of course, is the insane icon. Sting was doing the Joker wrestler before any of these other, you know, knockoff. No, fucking what's the 30 seconds from Mars guys? Jared Leto-esque jokers in the wrestling industry. So that threw me for a loop. I was like, come on, you can't call Sting Batman now. He's the Joker, which makes you not the Riddler, but who's a really low level Batman villain? The Calendar Man? I don't know.
Calendar Man, Solomon Grundy. I mean, there's a bit of them. I mean, arguably Mr. Freeze kind of sucks. You know,
Mr. Freeze,
I was a DC guy.
Mr. Freeze was never really Arnold. If you didn't have Arnold, then nobody would have any fondness for Mr. Freeze. I'm gonna go with Calendar Man. Absolutely. Scorpio Sky is Calendar Man.
I really just want to give shouts to Nate here for. We didn't do Elite or Delete. I said we're going to start with Blood and Guts, and Nate still did something totally fucking different.
I mean, but you said it yourself. You didn't tell me about this. So no, I started talking about what I was going to talk about. Also, it was a show-long point. And that's what really was refreshing to me about the show is like, oh, like there is interesting stuff up and down this card. There are big matches on future television shows and future pay-per-views to look forward to. And fucking, you know, Sean Spears went in there and he had a chair with his special logo on it and he nailed a guy with it. And I was like,
headshot?
Yeah, they had fucking headshots in the Blood and Guts match. I was like, okay, see these, you know, Tony, I don't know. You can make these guys work. So coming up on the anniversary, fresh start, AEW roster amnesty.
I think it's something that Aaron, we were talking about this morning, like, there is a formula to the War Games match, and we laid out, like, okay, you're not dicking around with, like, the idea of the faces get the advantage, like, the instant way to make a Blood and Guts / War Games match just absolutely, like, defeat the purpose of it, and they pick the right person from the inner circle, the babyface, to be in there to start, but it seemed like that, like, they carved out all this time for Blood and Guts, like, and they had it live in front of the crowd. They wanted to make sure that the crowd didn't feel like that they got screwed over, which is entirely fair. Like, the idea that they had all these state matches and then they only had one match in front of them and some solid promos, to be fair. But you had the idea of War Games that are, you have the periods and then you have a pretty quick conclusion afterwards, because usually one of the conceits about the War Games match, especially at the original ones, is you have someone like J.J. Dillon in there, and he is either you have like the idea behind it is that you have like the flunky, you have the manager has to get in there and fight them as well, and then they're the convenient person to submit or surrender. There was no opportunity for that here because of you had 10 people and they were all featured wrestlers in the roster, and you had basically 20 minutes after, or what was it? What was their term for the match beyond? Wasn't it like all out war?
Assault?
All out assault. I mean,
did they say that?
Yes, they did. Now that Nate said it,
I thought they were just calling it submit or surrender.
I mean, that's what I would have called it. All out assault is some real American gladiators ass stuff right there. But you had 20 minutes there, and a lot of it really was building towards the surrender up top of the cage of MJF forcing, I guess it would be Sammy Guevara to surrender for the inner circles to prevent Jericho going off the top of the cage. But it just kind of lost steam at a certain point. Like the first period with Dax and Sammy Guevara, probably some of the most I've enjoyed Dax in AEW. Like that period I felt like was worked really well. And then you had Sean Spears come in, as Nate said, like just going headshot, boom, headshot, which was perfect. And then, you know, Santana might be my MVP of this match just because when he came in, like he was someone that was constant action. And whenever the camera was focused on him, it was always interesting stuff he was doing. And it wasn't clear stalling because when it got to a certain point and the all out assault, I hate that. I'm just
all out assault.
All out assault during the actual match portion, it just kind of went to a halt. And I mean, you can't really do anything about the commercials. I mean, that's something that like they would probably love to be able to do it completely commercial free, but that's ultimately not their call, so like that's just what it is. But it got kind of meandering towards the end, and that was kind of one of my big issues. And I did really like that we got combat mode inner circle. Like I like that they came out all supposed to be wearing jumpsuits, like they were busting out of prison. I mean, that's a Chris Jericho idea if I ever heard of one. It's like, hey, go figure out what's the closest prison to where you grew up, and that's where you're going to be built from. So you had Sammy with the Harris County, Texas detention facility and all of that. Like that was tight, but
I think the timing for the show, kind of as they entered the second hour, they did this big championship match showdown sort of thing, setting up Pac versus Orange Cassidy for next week. And Omega cut a long promo and vamped a lot and talked to the crowd and did all this stuff. And then from that point, it kind of felt like they were trying to rush, like, oh, Kenny's going long in this. They came right back from that, started plugging next week's show, and Excalibur did the fastest match readout I've ever heard anybody do. He was just banging through all the matches, and they had Miro do his. And then they finally got into the match. It just felt like the timing was a little off because they had all these great ideas for the first third of the match that Mike was talking about, where you have all the individual wrestlers enter and it's very easy. You know, maybe it's not very easy, but it's a less complex task to, you know, sort of lay out a match where it's like, okay, this guy enters and how do we get this guy some shine? And what do we do these other guys while this is happening? And they had a lot of good ideas for that. And that was, I think, the highlight of the match. And that fucking kicked ass, really. I mean, you had some great-looking spots. You got awesome reactions for the baby faces coming in to even things up. You had just sort of the stuff that looks, you're not sure if it's planned or not, but looks totally brutal, like the guys, Ortiz getting, you know, trapped between the cage and the ring, and repeatedly Santana having the same thing happen. And that was all awesome. And it felt to me like their timing just got messed up. I don't know if because it's earlier in the show, but when you have Wardlow do his big entrance and showdown with the entire other team and it happens during an ad break, that feels like a fuck up to me. I don't think you would make that decision intentionally, because, you know, he was going to get shine there, and then you saw him get a bunch of shine later when he was going to, you know, try and make the one man comeback for the pinnacle. So that part was all great. But then it got into the all out assault part, where everybody's in the ring fighting at once, and yeah, you just kind of get a morass. Like, you only have so many ideas for what to do where it doesn't just turn into like a battle royal where everybody's grouped up in a corner or whatever and trading punches. And it just felt like they had too much time for that part of the match before they got to the finish of the match, which of course is where Tully Blanchard gets involved and they go and, you know, climb to the roof to do all that stuff. So it seemed they were probably trying to thread a needle, like, okay, we're going to do a super intense blood and guts match. It's going to be like War Games, which were these, you know, high energy, super intense matches for 25 minutes, whatever, but we're going to do it with commercials on television. So we have to have more time because we want the exciting stuff to happen in between the commercials. And then while the commercials are happening, that's when you can take, you know, a break in the ring a little bit, catch your breath, do whatever. And yeah, I just felt like that was too big a task to attempt on a first attempt at this blood and guts match. So yeah, Mike, the second part of that match was kind of meandering. And then you got onto the finish, which again, they had ideas for, and you can heighten the drama, of course, going to the top of the cage, it's going to heighten the drama, heighten the stakes. And then it all, you know, kind of comes down to what they did with the finish, which I think was, you know, a logical idea, a pretty decent idea for giving the heel team a win in the big gimmick match. I think that's a fine thing to do on television. But then, you know, you try and cap it off with the big bump and your mileage is going to vary on how you like that big bump.
Yeah, it all comes down to a real pacing problem, which is that if you have 2-minute entrances where, okay, when the bad guys enter, there's this fun beatdown, and when the good guys enter, there's this like big swell, especially with this big crowd of like, oh, this is excitement. So something exciting is happening every 2 minutes. And then suddenly you get 5-on-5 and it's like, it didn't feel like they had more than 2 minutes of ideas of like exciting things to do after that. And there was 20 minutes left in TV time when they got to the 5-on-5 part. So it's just poorly laid out. Like if you watch the old Crockett War Games matches, like they said, they're 25 minutes long. Like you could have done this in 30 minutes and had a really great match where the last segment is like 3 to 5 minutes, basically. Now, of course, they wanted to do this whole melodramatic thing on top of the cage. And my issue, I mean, I hate when a cage match goes outside of the cage. I just think the point of a cage is to keep the wrestlers inside the cage. So that's always going to irritate me. That said, when they get up top, it's like, okay, this is, from like a television perspective, this is compelling. You know, you got like, suddenly you can focus in on these two guys, because the point of War Games is that the end of the match is 5-on-5. Mike and I talked about that this morning of like, it's really a struggle to figure out how you're going to do a finish with 10 guys in a ring. And we are all, how many multi-man tag matches do we see where 10 pinfalls or submission attempts get broken up by somebody else? So it's really hard to figure out how you're going to do that. So, you know, their solution was break open the cage. But regardless of that, you get your focus on these two guys. The overall problem for me, and I do think like the bump kind of sucked, you know, it was weird to me that that the Inner Circle guys believed like, oh, yeah, I'm sure MJF will just stop doing this if we just quit. You know, I'm sure that'll happen. But my biggest problem with it was Pinnacle wins. MJF wins, but I don't think he or the Pinnacle comes out of this looking any better. They don't actually get that big bump, and I don't mean bump of like taking a bump, but like the ratings bump of like overcoming the Inner Circle in the way that you would want to kind of like the whole feud was about MJF taking Chris Jericho's spot, right? Yeah. Well, how did he push? Well, he literally pushed Jericho. Okay, sure. But how did he like...
You keep working against yourself with these words you're using.
but how did he elevate himself above Jericho match?
He was on top of the cage. Jericho was on the ground below, I think.
Fuck.
The traditional way to elevate a guy is if MJF pins him clean in the middle with this move, and it's like, I beat you. I have your belt now. I have your spot now, whatever. So I do kind of get what you mean. I think they tried to have their cake and eat it too by like, we're not going to cleanly beat the Inner Circle. There are big baby faces. Chris Jericho is the top guy. So we're going to have like a cheap shit heel finish from the heel, but he's also going to be a prick and push him off the cage in order to get the big spectacular finish. So I think it's kind of tried to have it both ways, and I think it like 70% works. And even like the crash pad is like, well, they did they put fake metal plates on it. That seems like a good idea. It's just when, you know, when you see the bump and you see the camera looking right at it and everybody sees those plates like bend up when he hits, it's like, well, everybody can see what that is. So I think there was maybe a way to make that work, because it seems like there were some ideas there. It just, you know, didn't get shot or whatever in the right way. What'd you think of the bump, Mike?
The bump? I mean,
not WWE's the bump.
Not WWE's the bump, the premiere. I'm not even going to pretend to know what their catchphrase is. The bump itself, like, it makes sense with MJF's character, and I felt like that it was sufficient there, and it does kind of, and MJF does have, like, the motivation that he literally wants to be higher than Jericho. My issue with the bump, and this is something that they now have a trend of, they really kind of shoot themselves in the foot with how they produce these things. Like, we've already been through how the explosion happened and how the explosion just was not what it was about to do, and they had to retcon it. This one, it was clear it was a crash pad from the go. Like, even if I didn't already, like, see a tweet about it, I would have been like, oh, yeah, no, that's a crash pad, obviously, that they're hiding there. And the thing that bothered me about the bump, like, I mean, made total sense wise. I mean, other than, like, Nate, you're entirely right, or whoever said it, I apologize.
This it was me. True.
Yeah, Nate. Okay, I was right then. Nate, you're absolutely right about it, that, like, it shouldn't be, like, the inner circle should have no reason to believe any of what MJF says. And
no,
it
I was
kinda...
right. But I was right, also.
Yeah. You both are right. Hey, we're all right here. But the motivation there. But the bump itself, like, Jericho started fidgeting when he landed instead of selling it like a dead fish. And that really bothered me. For some reason, I just, like, when I saw that, and, like, he was, like, fidgeting, like, he was, like, moving his head like this, whereas, like, for something, and, I mean, there's something to be said about the Jim Ross, like, dramatic voice, you know, the Bad News Jim Ross voice that, like, they tried to affect a little bit, and I did love the fact that Tony Schiavone called him a little shithead, or he called him a shit.
But if they're gonna do these big, spectacular endings, I guess you can't, and if you want it to, if you're obsessed with trying to do them safely, which, mm-hmm. you know, is a good idea, I guess, for your employees, then they really have to look great, or the, you know, people are going to pick them apart, because people want to pick wrestling apart. That's what we do on the show. If you can't make it look great, then you want to do it, then you have to do it like Darby Allin did it and just fucking do it and throw yourself down the stairs. If you can't do either of those things, then you just can't do it, or you're going to set people up for disappointment.
You see, Nate, I understand what you did there, because you knew I was going to make this point, so you asked me that question so you can make your follow-up point there, right?
Yes.
It's the magic of podcasting, friend.
Magic of podcasting. But, like, I had issues with the production all night, though. Like, that was a thing, like, with, like, shooting, like, a show with two rings and, like, moving and keeping your hard cam where it was and, like, having bad crane shots of the stuff that was in the first hour really bothered me. Like, it's like, guys, you could set up two hard cams and have, like, hard cam left ring, hard cam right ring. Like, just take a camera off the floor that you're already going to be taking off the floor anyways, because you have two rings you're dealing with.
You know, that and probably would have been cleaner, but I also kind of, one of the other things that I liked about this show was it just felt totally different because they, you know, slated out the entire second hour for this match, and they had, you know, like, going into the match, they had two separate interview segments, because, like, well, we got to, that, you know, it just had a different layout. It didn't feel like the same, you know, kind of rote formula that they do on most shows. You know, they're not all rote, but, you know, you kind of get the idea for how they like to pattern things. And just having the second ring there through the first hour just made it feel special and unusual in that way. So it didn't even bother me much that it was like, oh, it's kind of a crooked take on the ring because they didn't move the hard cam. But yeah, it would have been cleaner if they'd set up two hard cams, or just set up one hard cam and shoot one ring all night instead of switching from one ring to the other.
Yeah. I will say the production and doing those interviews before the match, like with the lights all dimmed and then, like, coming out and having, like, an interview station there, looked awesome. Like that, I think it might be some, like, the best production they did was, like, having them there and, like, having them, like, self-contained right there. It felt really organic, and it felt like it was really, like, in a lead up to something, and especially like when you had like Miro just go grab the microphone with like this imposing structure behind him as he says, "Darby, you, one of the best promos I feel like the company's had in a while." The closing line that Miro had there, so it just there were some hits and misses here, and it was something that felt like they could have made more hits a lot easier. They could have made it easier on themselves.
Yeah, that was a cool thing they would do in like WCW, where they'd do interviews up on like a stage or something, and the people could be like sort of addressing the crowd and face the crowd and play with the crowd instead of being cordoned off or whatever. I also just kind of like doing two interviews. It kind of felt like a UFC or something where it's like, the big match is coming up. We're going to make you wait for it, and you're going to build anticipation for it because we're going to do three interviews first.
Yeah, the two ring thing was weird because, you know, in WCW, the point of doing matches in separate rings is you got a whole fucking crowd there in an arena, right? And you don't want a whole side of the crowd to feel like, you know, they've been made to have a harder time watching the show. But these matches were taped in front of no one other than like the wrestlers around the ring or whatever. So it was really pointless. But yeah, the interviews were cool, and it had that feel that you're talking about, Nate. And also, like, I appreciated that they just wanted the live crowd to get to see some of the stars, right? Which also felt like, I don't know, it felt important and cool of like, man, a crowd seeing a show.
Yeah, it was like, wow, Orange Cassidy came out and the crowd was like, we get to see Orange Cassidy. Very much like John Thorne of AIW tweeted about how Eddie Kingston showed up at one of their shows recently and they went out to a restaurant and the server lost his mind about seeing Eddie Kingston and serving Eddie Kingston. He's like, wow. And went home and posted on Facebook about meeting Eddie Kingston. It's like, oh yeah, like it's been super easy to meet Eddie Kingston at a show for the last decade plus. But now he's on TV with Jon Moxley every week, and it's a whole new world for Eddie Kingston and all these people who didn't know who he was. So yeah, it was, you got some of that here on television where it's like Orange Cassidy came out and like, yes, we get to see Orange. We get to see Orange and Kenny interact. We're seeing stars and we're reacting to them. Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. You know, just seeing, hearing the reactions, that was exciting. All the, you know, the pops for, as you were talking about when the baby faces came in, you know, that is why I was pissed off. I didn't get to hear the Wardlow one, you know, like I want to hear people go crazy for Wardlow.
It was not as big as I would have hoped. He got booed.
You heard it, I guess.
Yeah. I saw the whole thing. He got booed a decent amount. You know, maybe AEW fans are normier than I thought, but I thought he was going to get like some quantity of face reaction just because he seems very cool. But no, he just got like straight up boos.
You know, and maybe they put him in the break because they were worried he would get cheers and they didn't want that on TV. I don't know. But yeah, I guess just overall kind of a weird match for me. A lot of, you know, the first part was great. I just, coming out of it, I'm not sure how anything has changed for anybody. I'm not sure that anybody is in a different position than they were before the match.
I would argue that the Inner Circle no longer have a purpose now.
Well, I don't know about that. Maybe that's true. I'd say maybe the big takeaway is we're not going to see Jericho for some number of weeks. So that's probably the big shakeup. Maybe Inner Circle has to figure out what they're going to do without Chris Jericho, and maybe that's why they don't have a purpose. But that seems like it should be the most obvious like impact going forward. And then, of course, MJF can come on TV every week and be like, I took out Chris Jericho. I took his spot. He's gone.
Yeah, that's true. And then he comes back, and I guess, I don't know, they're going to do MJF and Chris Jericho again. I mean, they have to eventually, I suppose. That was all Mike and I wanted to talk about this morning was like, oh, it's very intriguing how the finish is going to be because the Inner Circle has been so important to AEW. That was the big build on the Road to episode. And you're like, okay, are they going to, you know, put Inner Circle kind of behind them, you know? And it's like, okay, well, that was the thing that happened and now it's over. And then the Pinnacle is really just trying to get started, you know, and they needed to win to get the momentum. And somehow, I mean, this didn't really feel like a WWE finish, but it had the WWE effect of like the right thing without anybody getting anything out of it. It's just like, okay. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm not crazy about how it turned out, but at least there was a lot of fun to be had during the match. So
it's worth noting that it does seem like Fozzy has some dates coming up, and a lot of them that I'm seeing that haven't been rescheduled. It's pretty constant stuff, and at least for the next few weeks. So I don't think we'll be seeing Jericho for a while.
Yeah, so, you know, Santana Ortiz and Sammy get big face runs. Should be, you know, they're all primed for that. The audience is ready for that in a big way. You know, Jake Hager, whatever, who cares? He's around. So, yeah, you got good opportunities for all those guys going forward. And, you know, I think you've solidified the pinnacle as a unit, and I think you've kind of legitimized like Sean Spears in a way that he wasn't before, maybe, for me anyway. This was like the best thing he's done except for that initial chair shot. Obviously, you know, it doesn't mean I want to see him pushed, but you know, he's not like a stalker Ichikawa out there.
Hey, watch what you say about the best comedy wrestler of all time in my presence.
I hate to be horny on Maine, but I did have a moment of like, Sean Spears looks good in a pair of trunks.
Okay, Cassie Lee.
Anyway, yeah, that was my main takeaway. But yeah, that's been something that I've kind of hated about this, is that Sammy was so hot coming out of the big like proto breakup story, and then now he feels like an afterthought. So I hope they can kind of ramp that back up for him.
I don't know. This match felt centered around Wardlow and Sammy to me. The whole first act was Jim Ross putting Sammy over and him doing big spectacular spots. And the finish of the match was, hey, Sammy's the good guy that's going to submit and give up in the match because he wants to protect his friend Chris Jericho, the big star. So that to me is like, oh, Sammy's a good established babyface at this point.
Yeah, but there was a moment where it was like Sammy Guevara singles star is like what it felt like.
Yeah.
And him versus Jericho was like a main event program, it felt like.
Yeah, I think they can still do that. They can do Santana Ortiz, finally get like a good run in the tag division now. And, you know, instead of going right back to Jericho and MJF, maybe, you know, Sammy kind of goes his own way with the long-term goal of getting ultimate revenge on MJF. Maybe that's how you play it.
Yeah, and Sammy, out of like, I personally think like Santana is someone that, if I don't think they should break up Santana Ortiz at all, but if there was like a situation where you need to have a singles run out of someone, Santana is totally prepared for it between his promo at Road 2, and I felt like his fire that he came in with, the exception of FTR hair just like flying in there and like jumping off ropes and colliding into people, just popping the hell out of me. I feel like he came up for a while. Sammy is someone that it's so interesting to see like what could have happened if the Impact stuff would have worked for him, you know, because that could have kept him away longer and active longer, and that could have been something that played into things, you know.
Yeah, I did think about that, but also it seems like from them not wanting to do it, it's like, oh, there's no way to make this work for what you want to do with Sammy. We don't want him to be, you know, the third guy in a match where some other people are involved in the pinfall. So, yeah, I mean, if they had just given the X Division title and he kept it and never lost it, that'd be great. But it didn't seem like they were going to do that.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. But with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
All right, well, let's run down the rest of the show, the first hour or so of the show, and chat about that. Don Callis came out at the beginning of the show. He said Kenny Omega couldn't be here tonight, So MT Nakazawa is going to wrestle all by himself. So Nakazawa does not seem particularly pleased about this development. He's standing in the ring as John Moxley and Eddie Kingston make their entrance, but Kenny Omega attacks them from behind. And then we get the match with Kenny and Nakazawa versus Moxley and Eddie. And ultimately, Moxley pinned Nakazawa with the paradigm shift. After the match, the Young Bucks taunted Moxley and Eddie from the stage. Good Brothers attacked them from behind. This goes on for a bit, ends with Omega doing a one-winged angel on Eddie and I think Carl Anderson counting the three count.
That sounds right. Yeah. It's kind of fun seeing Michael Nakazawa in there with John Moxley.
Ripping off the shirt and just going
getting his shirt ripped off, choking him out with the headset, which he wears all the time because he's some weird riff on QT Marshall.
The mouth blood he incidentally got. A lot of incidental blood on this show.
Oh, which, yeah. I mean, everywhere, hey, pretty much.
Yeah. Was the only match without incidental blood Britt versus Julia Hart?
Sounds right. Hey, you know, they promised blood and they gave us blood. So,
boy, howdy.
All right. Do you guys think this is, well, now we know, we'll talk about this later, but we know what the Kenny match for Double or Nothing, we vaguely know where that's going. So do we think we're looking at Young Bucks versus Mox and Eddie for Double or Nothing?
That makes sense as a big match to feature John Moxley, who's pushed harder than anybody else in the company, and while also keeping away from Omega for a little bit. And yeah, Young Bucks have their big SCU match already happening. So yes, that makes sense. They have to make those steps play out over the coming week.
It lines up, and I mean, it's something that they've nicely kind of, like, the nice thing about the SCU match is that you don't really need to build it at this point. So they've done all this build towards that I think that then moving into that, but then and it doesn't have to be a title match between them. Like, it does not have to be another title defense there, but it will be a title defense. They'll find some way to justify it. But I think that that's the likely direction. And I think it's a smart use of this feud and all four individuals in it.
Tonight, it felt like they were like, okay, baby, we're going into overdrive on this build to Double or Nothing. We're going to give you all the matches.
I for once, I don't have to complain about, hey, we're supposed to be paying this money for this pay-per-view, because, brother, they were building towards that pay-per-view tonight.
I do think I said last week, hey, you know, this could all come together. Maybe if they don't put anything together over the next 2 weeks, then I'll complain, but they still got time.
I mean, I'll still say that they could have been building stuff, and I feel like that it's stuff that they could have been done pretty easily, like the whole thing with, like, Orange Cassidy has just kind of been floating on the ether, and so has Pac over the last few months. And if this was going to be the big build towards one of the other ones there, like, you could have been making, like, who's going to be like this, and then build up with that. I mean, they have done short build championship title matches and have felt like less like that. They're like, oh, well, these two are on top. Let's have them face each other for the match against Kenny.
Then we had Cody versus QT Marshall. Cody won with the figure four. After the match, the governor, Anthony Ogogo, hits Cody with the liver punch, drapes him in the British flag. And I assume we have another Double or Nothing program there.
Governor's got to win that match. Love the factory. Love the governor. You know, the match was fine for where it got us. You know, Cody does these things where he wrestles. I don't know. I got to wrestle my best friend, Sean Spears. We got to go out there and have the best 2.5-star match that you've ever seen. This is Cody's driving passion. I got to have my own promotion so I can have 2.5-star matches with my friends. Like, I gotta play my music my own way. I can't have Vince telling me how to play my music, because I love nothing more than 2.5-star specials. Yeah, the factory rules. Governor should punch out more people in the coming weeks. He should just punch out people backstage. That's my take.
Yeah, I think it's something that, I mean, we haven't seen Alex Marvez on TV for a while. I think that he should, like, sock him and then, like, get him off TV for even longer. Just, like, do like that and then QT just be like, oh, I'll use my other money to pay for it and do that way. The match itself popped me, and not because I thought it was like a great match, just because like we had a back rake as like a big spot in this match. Like Cody's shine ended, his first shine ended with a giant back rake in 2021, and that just tickles me. And you know, the match itself, it's exactly what I was expecting a Cody versus QT Marshall match to be. I mean, a whole lot of just I don't even know how to explain why this like tickled me, but like the idea of them doing a bad looking double crossbody spot really amused me and really gave me a level of life there. But I enjoy this feud, even though I think QT needs to tone down the Sopranos act about 20%. And however, I think the governor needs to crank up his act a good 300% while we're at it.
Yeah, the match sucked. It's like, Cody, bud, you're good. The matches that you have that are good are filled with, you know, shenanigans and nonsense.
Melodrama, yeah.
Yeah, you can't just, like, wrestle QT Marshall for 12 minutes or whatever the fuck.
Well, I yes, you can, and that's what we get here. Well, also,
just because QT... you can, Michael, doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, no, I mean, but that's kind of the story of AEW at times, right?
Sure. Sure, yeah, for sure. I'm fascinated to see if Cody is willing to put over the governor just like clean on pay-per-view.
I mean, Cody seems confident that he can go out and get betrayed by somebody and get his ass beat, and he's not going to lose any of his stature or status for it. So I kind of think the governor beats him.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Well, we'll see, I guess. I mean, I'd like to believe
he seems like a Cody project too, right? So
that's true, and he's like a legit athlete, you know, so some people get very excited about that.
Right. Undertaker, oh, I can't lose to anybody except the fucking MMA guy because he's real. He's legit.
Then this was the segment with Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky with Alex Marvez. Scorpio Sky tells us Sting is a mosquito, so he's going to kill him. Ethan Page says, Darby and I have a storied history, but nobody wants to hear about a bunch of matches no one ever saw. Friend of the show, Cubs fan, said no, he just wants to hear people named Aaron talk about it.
Yeah, we got, I don't know if you looked at the mentions of the EE Pod account. We got a lot of mentions when that happened.
No, I did not see
like
that.
Oh, the everything AEW boys must be laughing their heads off. I was like, I was just mad that Ethan Page had a good segment. I was pissed off.
Grant Akuma made sure to give us a shout there as well, which popped me a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And yeah, he just talked about that he had caused some injuries to Darby, so Darby attacked, and then they threw him down some stairs.
That's safety nerds were out. They were. I mean, hopefully, I'll retract this if it turns out that Darby actually got super fucked up there. But yeah, a lot of people doing a lot of hand wringing about having Darby do this big bump. Like, you didn't see Darby Allin get thrown in a body bag onto a security railing and at the Hialeah Stadium in fucking Orlando, Florida. So if you weren't there for those Ethan Page matches, then you know you can't talk about Darby. That's the new rule.
Simply
shut the fuck up. That's just all I have to say about that. Darby, this is what Darby does. I mean,
this is why Darby is where he is.
Yes, he would not exist but for his willingness to hurt himself. So if you don't like this, like, you don't like Darby, right? I mean, that's the Darby character.
This is not really fair. I do understand people being like, oh, I don't want to see Darby get actually injured because I really like Darby. And I don't like seeing human beings suffer or whatever on television. That's fine. I understand that. You do have to acknowledge there's some dissonance between going, ooh, Darby took a really nasty looking bump down the stairs. Oh, but also that bump Chris Jericho took looked so fake and stupid. You can't, very difficult to hold both of those statements at the same time.
And it's not like somebody's holding a gun to Darby's head to do these bumps. He's suggesting these bumps. I feel confident.
Yeah, and it's not like if he wasn't wrestling, he wouldn't be doing stuff like this. I think that's also fair to say. I mean, he is someone that, I mean, he posted his bailout videos, and I would say his bailout videos looked much more gnarly than that bump that he took today.
That, yeah, that's extremely true. He would definitely be doing this shit one way or the other.
He's insane. Then we had Britt Baker versus Julia Hart. Britt won with the lockjaw.
This was perfect for what it was. You know what I mean? Britt won and a lead up to her title match, and she completely took out someone that is both a Molly Holly and Mr. Anderson student and a Cody Rhodes student. So covering all the bases of AEW Dark right there.
Yeah, good to, you know, just give Britt some warm-up wins for her title challenge. That makes sense. People seem excited about the title challenge. There was a pop when they played the graphic. You know, start giving us the big promo packages and, you know, Sheeta interviews and, you know, Sheeta highlights of her title reign videos. Start putting those together now so we can build the anticipation for the title match when it comes without needing, you know, little dentist office skits and stuff in these Chris Jericho segments. Just give us the fucking Moxley versus Nagata video, but for this big title match that everyone wants to see.
Yeah. And it's
Sorry. We were Mike and I were playing chicken there of who was going to talk. and it's like Sheeta needs to be a part of this at some point, and she really hasn't played any role so far. So,
but it's something that they have all the footage they really need for this feud in the can, because they've been building this thing, and this has been the end goal for Britt Baker for such a long time that it's really just telling their editor, okay, we have the clip of Hikaru Shida talking about, like, her dream is to defend the title in a sold-out arena because she's not had the opportunity to do so yet, and then, like, Double or Nothing apparently is going to be full capacity. So, I mean, there you go. You have that there. And then you have the lead-up with Britt. Like, this is something that, like, other than, like, face-to-face stuff, given that we are 4 weeks out, they're at the finishing line here. It's just how they choose to portray what has happened before. Like, am I off base in saying that I feel like that the tough work in this feud is over? Now it's just time to cash in.
Well, no, they've done the tough work of making a really legitimate and exciting challenger. They've done the tough work of having an established champion who's had the belt for over a year or whatever and faced off all comers. Those are like, yeah, the big picture tough parts of making an exciting title match. Now they're in like the crucial stretch where it's like, well, if they just sit on their hands and, you know, do goofy skits that don't have any heat, or, you know, just kind of back burner this feud, or like Aaron said, don't make Sheeta an integral part of this and, you know, emphasize how important her reign has been to the division and this stuff. If they don't do any of that, then it'll lose all of its momentum. So they've certainly done the big picture tough parts, but now they're in like the critical period. It's like, okay, now in order to cash in, we have to get it over the finish.
No, that's entirely fair. And that's something that I think can be accomplished relatively easily. Like, I didn't mean to dismiss that. It's just like, you know, this is when like you reap your rewards. That was the point I was making. Like, I think that you could very easily do that segment. I think it would be incredibly awesome for the build. And I think that's something that I feel like, at least with how they've been portraying both of these wrestlers, that I have confidence. Whereas I don't have confidence in other feuds that are happening right now, I have confidence in this one that they'll be able to pull that off.
I think in the spirit of me giving all the AEW roster amnesty, I think just as a podcast, we should agree, you know, when you're responding to me and saying, oh, Nate, you know, that's reasonable, that's fair. You know, I think we should just say, Nate, you're right. You're totally right. You're very correct. and everything you say has persuaded me and swayed me, and I stand.
Hey, I mean, you were able to lead me to the right decision earlier on the show. So, I mean, Nate, you're right. You are a great leader of humanity, and I look forward to future podcasts where you further will lead me to the right destination.
Thank you, Mike. I'm happy to have you as part of this journey.
I will not be involved in this journey. you're going to have to convince me of something, Nate, on this show.
You might be has dug his heels in. What did I say earlier? Mr. digs his heels in.
Mr. Heels two dug in.
Mr. Two Damn Heels dug in.
Mr. Two Damn Two Heels dug in.
I think that's it.
All right. Sheeta needs a second for this match, and you could be boring and have it be Mizunami, but it should be Keiko. Is all I'm saying.
Keiko.
Look, in the spirit of compromise, Aaron, you're right. I agree. I'm persuaded.
Keiko did get her second. She is getting her second shot, so she'll be able to be there.
Oh, sick.
I did see that. She's very nervous because everyone that she knows has gotten the shot has been sick and stuff. So, you know, power through, Keiko. It's the pain is worth the reward.
Yeah, I mean, she made it through draft day, so that's over. Right. And now she can sit back and chill.
Y'all, I have a conspiracy theory that I'd like to lay down on us that actually after we when we get to it, I'm going to lay down this conspiracy theory. This is what we call a build. I have a crazy conspiracy theory that's popped in my head that I'll be dropping on y'all in about 5 minutes.
All right. Looking forward to it.
I would call that more of a tease than a build, but okay. I'm interested to see.
They did. Okay. Taz did one of his breakdown videos, but I missed the first part of it, so I don't know what he was breaking down. But eventually, I mean, he was just putting over Hobbs and Cage and talking shit about Christian.
Yeah, he was talking about Christian's maneuvers and, you know, basically, you know, criticizing him and saying he was bad. I also did not pay very much attention to this, but the premise seemed funny.
I thought this was a scream. Like, I'm saying, like, you're doing good here. And he's done this before. Like, he did this with Darby, and he did it very successfully. And I like how they're kind of tapping back into it. And the only thing is I wish they would have, like, him be doing these segments, like, not in a feud. So that, like, that when you – so, like, when they dropped the Darby in one in, they had it for a couple minutes. They had a couple weeks rolling where he would actually be giving, like, technical explanations, and then he just shat on Darby. Like, having this come in out of the blue, I feel like wasn't as effective as it could have been, but I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think these segments are always good, so I wouldn't mind if he was still doing them. But yeah, it does make sense because he has, like, transitioned into this full-blown heel manager that he only does it to call out his nemesis.
Then we got the just the inexplicable four-way tag match to determine a challenger for the Young Bucks for next week on Dynamite. Varsity Blondes versus Jurassic Express versus SCU versus the Acclaimed. Kazarian pinned Brian Pillman Jr. after the best moonsault ever.
The best Meltzer ever. When they do the spike pile driver,
oh, it's
the best Meltzer ever. Yeah, you know, the there's a limit to how peaked I'm going to get by SCU, but they're doing this story really as effectively as they can, where they have to win or they'll break up. They're going to win, and they'll do a title challenge against their longtime friends who turned heel and betrayed them, and they're going to lose the match, and they're going to break up, and they're going to, you know, end their careers to their compatriots, the Young Bucks. It's a, you know, totally, totally good pro wrestling story.
I just, this match, like, this was something that I kind of was almost talking myself into on light, thinking that we might be getting a Varsity Blondes match out of this, and I was kind of, like, building up for it, and I kind of came away with this. Like, Varsity Blondes and Brian Pillman Jr. has really, over the, like, the last 6 months, has really like, picked it up. And, you know, it's blowing off the SCU storyline. I hope it ends with a certain – I think we all know how that match ends, and I hope that, you know, for this tag team and for some of the wrestlers involved in it, that, you know, they move on to other things.
Max Caster, great rap.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I thought that he had it's no Andrew Cuomo line, but I thought that, like, bringing up, like, Dark Side of the Ring, like, right before Dark Side of the Ring promo or commercial was pretty on the nose there.
Yeah, it was a good John Stossel line. He's great.
Then we got the hype video for John Moxley versus Blue Justice Yuji Nagata coming up next week. Even a Nagata promo worked in there, and then Moxley fucking just went nuts on Yuji Nagata, like he's just gonna destroy him. He has no respect for Yuji Nagata, and he's gonna kill him next week.
He has no respect for anyone once the bell rings.
That's true, but that includes one Yuji Nagata.
So they didn't. I mean, this was great. This was sick. This was a picture perfect way to, like, have two promotions working together, where they took what was basically a whole video package that New Japan put together and had on their socials and stuff, and probably on New Japan Strong, I imagine. And then plugged in a new Moxley promo and, you know, gave it a whole second life. And it was fucking awesome. They were, like, had these great shots of you know, going back and forth between both of them, all this AEW footage of Moxley and then like classic Yuji Nagata footage. And like Moxley talking about respect, and you see Nagata with like the whole crowd behind him and him doing his salute. That was awesome. They did kind of skip over the step where Yuji Nagata responded to John Moxley and was like, you know, talking a little trash about him. So you were kind of like, ooh, Moxley escalated things a lot there between steps A and C. But yeah, there was a promo in between there where Yuji Nagata was like, I'm not going to bring my six shooter because I like good old fashioned pure pro wrestling or whatever.
All right. So I'm going to couch this by saying, I know absolutely this is not the case. What if this was a, because there's been examples of this happening. What if this is a way for Bushiroad to get all the New Japan wrestlers vaccinated?
That'd be fun.
Think about it.
That'd be good.
That would be
sick. I support it. You know, Tony should be sending vaccines over anyway. So I endorse it.
Yeah, just the idea of John Moxley is going to remain the IWGP US champion for however long it is, and just will be having matches like Yoshihashi is going to come over and get a vaccine.
That is a dark match, Tony. Do not put that on Dynamite. I don't want to see fucking Yoshihashi.
If Takeshita can't get on Dynamite, then do not put fucking Yoshihashi on Dynamite.
He is dark wrestler.
I mean, you know, I mean, he's going to become talent. He's just going to be... He's gonna get like his V40 very quickly because they're gonna send over Toru Yano, and actually that needs to happen on Dynamite. They need to rehab that G1 rematch happen there. So that was the idea I had, is that this is actually a operation to get the New Japan roster vaccinated.
You knew fucking New Japan was in a bad place when everybody started the Yoshihashi Redemption Tour narrative, where it's like, oh, Yoshihashi's got this big trios title story and he finally won his first belt, and wow, Yoshihashi's really showing up big in whatever, the fucking New Japan Cup. It's like, no, he's not. He still stinks. His face doesn't move. Stop trying to convince me Yoshihashi does shit.
I'm old enough to remember the first time people tried to pretend Yoshihashi was good, and it was never true. He's always been bad.
Always been bad. Just makes me feel nothing as a human being.
Theros in the chat is right on board with me with this. And Yujiro, you American TV veteran. I mean, he member of No Limit.
If
he's
going
to get at this,
I'm sorry. If he brings over Muffin 30 ass, it will be the most over shit that's ever been on Dynamite.
He has to bring back the old entrance theme as that happened. You know, the sexy saxophone that used to have
the Brockhampton one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The best theme song that New Japan has had in years, and it's gone away now. Yujiro on Dynamite. I mean, everyone's going to come over here. I mean, do we think Iizuka needs to get one? I mean, like, he's still being involved in storylines one way or another. Like, Takashi Iizuka's going to come over as well.
See, I mean, his theme might be better than the classic Yujiro theme. I don't know. That's a close call.
One and two.
Kenny Omega was out with Tony Schiavone. They say next week is going to be Pac versus Orange
Cassidy. Throw us in the chat talking about, sorry.
You're not sorry.
No, I'm not. I thought it would be funny. About how Yujiro is an American TV veteran because he was on TNA. Did you see that TNA was teasing like, oh, Naito, he was here before. He might be here for our big Slammiversary show or whatever.
No.
Well, they did, which is like very...
Great social media outreach there. I respect it.
I kind of feel like it might help New Japan a little if Naito showed up on Impact. Is that messed up to say?
I mean, that's a way to get the title eventually off Kenny, you know?
That'd be sick. Yeah, I would watch that for sure. I'm just, you know, I don't know what Naito's been doing. But it would be, you know, much like Yuji Nagata on Dynamite, it would be the most discussion anything and that New Japan is doing has gotten in the West for some time.
So Kenny Omega was out with Tony, and
before we get to this, Aaron,
listen, Mike, you just said that'd be a way to get the belt off of Kenny Omega, and I didn't interrupt you and correct you, so I don't want to hear it.
I'm talking about the Impact belt
to Naito.
Yeah.
Kenny Omega versus Naito for the Impact title.
They have great matches.
Right. Yeah. I mean, It'll be a great thing for a company that needs, you know, the needs a little push in New Japan, you know, get the Impact belt on your guy.
You know, I've heard people do the theory of like, you need this like neutral space where Omega wrestles like Okada or Kota Ibushi in Impact. And it's like, that's an interesting theory. But the idea of something like that actually happening in fucking Impact is just too far a bridge for me.
Oh, absolutely.
What is the theory? I'm not sure I understand.
The theory is
Kenny can't go to Japan to wrestle in New Japan. And
I don't accept that premise in the first place. He was booked for Ultimate Party after he had his issue at the airport. He was going to be on the Ultimate Party show after all of that.
He was going to also be on the OWE Japan show.
Yeah, so he can't go to Japan now. Anyway, why couldn't you do those matches on Dynamite or on a pay-per-view where people will see them?
The theory is, and I'm not saying whether I subscribe to this, I'm just saying the theory is maybe AEW doesn't want to put their people on New Japan, and New Japan doesn't want to put their people on AEW, so if they kind of can meet somewhere else, it's like a nice way of not having to do those things.
Switzerland.
Right, basically. Okay. Yeah. So
Nashville, Switzerland.
It doesn't make sense now that we've seen, you know, New Yusuke is going to be on Dynamite, of course.
Right.
But I do. So I guess the concept is Taz versus Mike Awesome at an ECW show when Taz worked for WWF and Mike Awesome worked for WCW.
Yes.
That was cool. That was a cool thing.
It was a cool thing.
You had a hot ECW crowd for that, whereas TNA, no.
They have no crowd. Pack versus Orange Cassidy in an eliminator match next week. Omega says, Pac's one of the best wrestlers in the world. He's beat me before. Let's just announce the match. That's what it's going to be. Me versus Pac. Tony says, no, it's going to be Pac or Orange Cassidy. Orange comes out. Omega, not impressed. Talks about Orange being very popular, not championship material. Says Orange stole the sunglasses gimmick from him. Takes the sunglasses, gives them to Nakazawa. Tells Orange Cassidy, see you in 10 years when you grow up.
You know, I like Dan Severn's belt train gimmick, but Michael Nakazawa's Kenny Omega's belt pillow is maybe better, especially because he wears the AEW ones and all the other ones he delegates to Nakazawa. It's like, Nakazawa, you can have the fucking AAA title. That's fun.
Yeah, I think like the thing that like gets me is like when he put the sunglasses on Nakazawa and Nakazawa struck the pose with the belt on, it was like this with the he had to readjust the aviators. That cracked me up. Like, I thought that this was and it's very clear that is the path forward. I think that, you know, like it all makes sense. I will be really sad when Pac loses next week, because that does seem like that, you know, he's kind of secondary here.
Yeah, I saw a lot of complaining about why do this segment now when Orange Cassidy hasn't won the match yet. I don't know. I don't think it's impossible that this is just a segment to make you second guess next week and Pat can still come out and beat him. And then it's like, you know, we thought Orange Cassidy was going to win that match because they did the promo last week, but they swerved us and now we get a Pac versus Omega match and I'm excited for it. You know, it seems perfectly fine. Orange Cassidy heard him talking shit and he came out and confronted him. You know, it seems like some just good pro wrestling segments.
I mean, it also like gives you more of a reason to root for Orange Cassidy in the match.
Yeah.
So yeah, makes sense to me, whatever they do. But yeah, I mean, it did feel like that's where they want to go. But either of those matches is a good title match for your pay-per-view. So it really doesn't matter.
I didn't think they would go to Orange Cassidy as like a world title challenger on pay-per-view at this point. But it's a crazy thing to think about. But, it seems like it would be a good – I mean, it would be a good match for sure. It seems like it would probably be a drawing match and it seemed like a big event for a pay-per-view.
Yeah, and it's a good heat-up because it's – we've seen how Kenny has been as a pay-per-view draw, and Orange Cassidy has been someone that they've noticeably – like, it makes sense that he has not been really up to stuff and it kind of has been – like the third and the best friends versus Kip and Miro thing, because then you had this in the back pocket and, you know, I mean, they're able to heat this up real quick. So makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's like neither of them is going to win. So it really doesn't matter, I guess,
that's kind of why I just do think Orange Cassidy wins. It's like, well, they can beat Orange. That's fine. It's a good defense for Kenny. They'll have a good match, and then you're not dealing Pac another loss, because you know I think you still want to protect Pac as a potential top title holder. And then you know you have a longer play where Orange eventually gets to like the TNT title, and it's received as a big moment because he's been trying and challenging for all this time.
Over in the Discord, Drake makes a good point. Why did Cage beat Hangman Page if Cage isn't part of the eliminator here for the title challenge?
Well, I don't know who's in the, I think they said that Pac and Orange were the top ranked guys, right?
Yes,
because Page got knocked off.
But it gives you a big, big boost to beat the number one guy, right?
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know. That didn't bother me. I mean, you kind of want Cage in like it's a grief spot where he never gets the spots because he's like the fuck the world champion and just be like, this sucks. I'm getting screwed again. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's something that it seems like that Cage is dialed into whatever the team Taz versus Christian Cage thing is as well. So I don't think he was ever going to be in the picture with this.
No, he's did he challenge for the TNT title on Dynamite once? Is that what happened? He's a TV challenger. He's not a pay-per-view challenger. It's just where I slot Brian Cage in my mental hierarchy.
Right. And when he came into the company in the pay-per-view with Taz, he won the match and then he had a TV world title shot against Moxley. So, yeah, I mean, it lines up.
He's just a TV level guy.
Nate, yet again, you've made an excellent point. I absolutely agree with
you. I love this show. This show is so good now.
And I just wanted to provide more evidence backing up your tremendous point.
Thank you, Mike.
I hate this.
I feel like this is a really good episode we're doing.
Miro is out with Tony. He says 7 days from now, he has a date with Destiny, a signed contract to face Darby, the man who doesn't mind dying versus the man who doesn't mind killing him.
Yeah, this was sick. Matt will be sick. I think, did we pitch this on last week's show? I feel like we did. Miro versus Darby.
Yeah,
and
we talked
just
about
it. Just killing him. And now you're still protecting Darby because Darby took the big bump this week. So when he gets wrecked next week, it won't hurt him that much. You know, it won't feel like he was a fake champion. And that's going to be awesome. Then you move Darby onto the Ethan Page thing and you have fucking belt monster Miro. But I think that's great for everybody. Just all this stuff is hitting on all cylinders for me.
I'm not sure that this is going to happen, but if they somehow went from Miro with Kip to Miro gets aligned with Ethan Page, I will lose my fucking mind.
That's really, really make people long. Nope, amnesty. I'm amnestying Ethan Page.
I mean, they could have conversations about Gucci versus Banana Republic, of course.
He had Louis Vuitton on today, didn't he? Didn't they say they rubbed Darby's face in his Louis V's?
I'm not sure who was wearing the sneakers.
Okay, I thought it was Ethan. And I was like, wait, that's not Banana Republic. Those aren't his navy blue shoes. Canvas shoes.
Those aren't his beautiful shoes. This isn't his beautiful house.
Yeah, and then they did the Blood and Guts match that we talked about off the top of the show. So that was pretty much the show because there's a lot of stuff, but there were only a few segments total. If you want to support our show, the best way to do so is to go to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. It's the start of the month. It's a pay-per-view month, so we'll have a Double or Nothing live instant reaction. We'll have some stuff leading up to Double or Nothing, some retrospective look backs. I'm not sure what we're going to do. We got two Double or Nothings now in the past. So, we're building up some retro content to discuss. So we'll have to figure out what the best way is to tackle
all of
that.
Do an audio commentary on last year's retrospective episode and just and listen to ourselves talk and then talk over it.
That's a very funny idea, actually.
I really popped him with that one. He got all excited.
Yeah, that made me laugh. So we'll do that. Also, planning to deliver on the deathmatch episode that we talked about. So hopefully that'll be up this month, too. We have a Discord, so check that out. This week, we had Mike talking about Rey Dorius and various other things on Mike's Tea Break.
Yeah, so it was the first big show of AAA's year, and because there's a lot of AEW crossover and affiliation there, watched the show, and I also, because of, I just, I don't know why I like doing these things, but I get a lot. I like talking about just like my theory about how a thing's happening and how AAA is in a very interesting spot, and especially how Lucha Libre and the Mexican scene has been kind of has probably been decimated more so than any other scene other outside of Europe by COVID and how things are responding. And then, you know, we're going to have to get you, Aaron, to watch this Federacion wrestling show because there's a lot of wild stuff that's happening there. Ty Conti and Red Velvet are going to be on this show.
Okay, I'm listening.
Yeah, yeah, with Ayako Hamada. Like, it is a
okay, I'm listening. Sick.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's like thing. There's also a Matt Taven main event.
I can just turn it off before the main event. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So just had a chance to, like, watch that, give my thoughts about that. And, you know, I do know in the future that I don't know when it's getting recorded, but Drew and I are going to be talking about the Nightmare Factory Produce 2 show sometime pretty soon.
Also, you know, it's the reason it's a great month to subscribe to the Patreon is if we get enough subscriptions, I will be traveling to New York City on June 19th on my birthday to Dave and Buster's in Times Square to see the Pink Dream Alex Gracia for a meet and greet.
Didn't know that's where that was going. I thought that was going to be, hey, you like blood? Well, Mike's going to blade on cam. But no, it's the Alex Gracia and Hikaru Shida autograph session at a Dave and Buster's along with like some Playboy models, question mark?
Yeah. So it's going to be good. And I can only go if you all give me enough money so that I can, you know, take this trip. So do it.
Patreon. The more patrons we have, the more checkies Aaron can buy.
That's right, baby. We got three tiers. The $8 tier. The key is that the $8 tier gets you the live show and the replay of this show. So, and sometimes it takes a while for that main show to go up. So you'd like to have that YouTube replay. Patreon.com/everythingelite. Next week on Dynamite is the name of the show that we talk about. We will have the IWGP US Championship match, John Moxley versus Yuji Nagata, Young Bucks versus SCU. That's a title match too, right?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Title versus tag team, basically. So
impromptu apuestas match.
That's right, baby. An eliminator match, Pac versus Orange Cassidy to see who's going to wrestle Omega at Double or Nothing. TNT title match, Darby Allin versus Miro. Tony's going to interview Jade Cargill. Cody will make his Double or Nothing announcement, which it's like,
okay,
who gives a fuck? It's like, if you're going to wrestle the governor, then just build the feud. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, sick card. It's like pay-per-view level card.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to like on this show.
The governor. All right. And then we found out for sure that a Double or Nothing for the Women's World title will be Hikaru Shida versus Britt Baker on Sunday, May 30th. It's going to be at Daly's Place with a full capacity crowd. So I will not be traveling to that. But I am. How hard? I was talking to TJ Hawk, friend of the show TJ Hawk, about this earlier today. Mm-hmm. How difficult do you think All Out tickets are going to be to come by?
Insane.
Yeah, I said that's going to be the only excuse people have in our DM for not coming to All Out is not being able to get tickets because, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's going to be open and a hot ticket.
And I think that they'll probably be doing some sort of like fan fest, given that they are doing a lot of stuff, it seems like, in Jacksonville. I don't know if this got officially announced, but I saw their speculation. They might be doing another live show on Friday and then the fan fest and then the pay-per-view on Sunday.
No, I mean for the September show, like,
oh, yeah, no, yeah,
yeah. That's what I'm saying is I think they'll probably be doing that again in Chicago, okay. Most likely. Yeah,
yeah. So you'll have travelers and
yeah. Well, I'm gonna I'm gonna drop a line to my friend Tony Khan and just say, hey, you gotta make sure to get the EE boys in the building.
I didn't get in the building for Revolution.
Yeah,
and I've held that against Maxwell Jacob Friedman personally, hence all of our criticism of him on the show.
However, we are now
Amnesty, yes. Amnesty.
Yes.
AEW,
yes.
Amnesty.
I want to be clear, Nate. I appreciate it.
I want to be clear, I will never amnesty anyone.
No, yeah, your grudges die hard. No chill Aaron Bentley. That's all.
Yeah, no, I love to hold grudges. I love to hold grudges for other people. Like,
right.
If somebody did something to you, I'm probably still mad about it after you forget about it and don't care anymore.
Right. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I did say I inherited all of your grudges when I joined the show here.
Yes,
you did. So, yeah, for sure.
Congratulations.
It's been fun.
All right. Well, I think that's pretty much all we have to talk about tonight. It was, you know, there wasn't as much on Dynamite as usual. They didn't do 5 billion things as they usually do. So make sure you follow us on Twitter.
Oh, can I? I'm going to respond to. I'm just going to. Recaps on the show are good. I like recaps for a couple reasons. First, they tell the audience what's important. Second, stuff just gets more over and is more impactful when you see it multiple times. You can focus in on the details. Also, you know, we're talking about wrestling fans. Stuff gets over with wrestling fans just from repetition. Like, you can have the worst catchphrase in the world. Like, it's not confidence, it's all ego. And if you just say it enough, it'll get over from repetition. It's like fucking the Miz's entire career. So that's another reason. Recaps are good and enhance the show. You don't have to do them for every segment like WWE, but to, you know, when you have a giant angle like the Nightmare Factory or the Factory laying out the Nightmare Family, like, show it again the next week just to emphasize how devastating it was and how this is an ongoing sort of story.
You know, I agree with that because it's like you have this group of people who, when people criticize something they like, they will say, oh, that's WWE brain. You just have been brainwashed by WWE. And it's like, but no, that is actually WWE brain, because you're right that, like, they do repeat everything and show a replay of everything, and that gets annoying. But that doesn't mean that all replays are bad or that all recaps are bad. We have seen very clear evidence that people don't tune into Dynamite every single week. Also, like, their audience does come and go. So sometimes it's good to re-show things,
right?
You know,
every other promotion has made good. Like, you go back to, like, the history of, like, hardcore television, and, like, half of those shows would be recaps or, like, you know, clipped matches and then a recap of whatever the big feud is that they're going to their big show where they're going to sell all the tickets. You know, so I'm not saying, again, do another anime recap episode because you're short on time on Dynamite. But, you know, when you have a giant angle, if you don't recap it or go back to it at all, or what should be a giant angle, it just feels like TNA, where it's one thing onto the next, on the next, on the next, to the back, to the back, to the back.
Yeah, no, I agree. I kind of, because of the other stuff on the show, I kind of hate to agree with you at this point, Nate, but
I said I'd persuade you on something.
And now you didn't persuade me on that. I already agreed.
There's no way to know that.
I'm telling you.
Make your own choice, audience.
All right. Find out other things that Nate will try to persuade me on over at Everything AEW on Twitter. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji. Hey, Nate's trying to think of something he could persuade me on.
I told you to watch the Royal Tenenbaums, so you'll have to try that and see if I persuaded you.
No, I will never. I will never do that. I'm going to be honest with you.
Big Gene Hackman guy.
Am I?
That's what you said on the fucking podcast.
I don't think I've ever said I'm a big Gene Hackman guy.
Okay, well, you didn't say those exact words. You did say, oh, I do like Gene Hackman or something to that effect.
I don't know. I'll have to check the tape on that one.
Run it back.
Well, when we're doing our audio commentary of that episode, I'll figure out whether that was true. Have people done audio commentaries of podcasts before?
Yes. No. I stole that idea. Yeah, I stole that idea from... I think the first people that did it were the Harris Whittles, RIP, and Scott Aukerman podcast, Analyze Fish, where Harris Whittles tried to persuade Scott Aukerman to like fish. And Scott Aukerman was like, no, I will not fucking like fish. And one, like, in the first season, like, episode 8 is like an audio commentary of episode 6 or something, where they brought Paul F. Tompkins on just to talk over it. So that's where I stole the idea.
That's a very funny bit. But of course, Harris Whittles is a very funny man.
Yes, he was.
So I have to agree with that. All right. Well, I'm really thinking of, it would be a funny bit to do, like, all of our episodes, be like, okay, we're going to recap every episode we've ever done.
It's time for us to do Everything Elite 74. Everything Elite. We have to do it out of order. We have to pick, like, random episodes. Like,
I mean,
like,
this is not so different from, like, old wrestling recap timeline shows where they go back and watch. You know, all the people that are upset that WWE Network doesn't exist because they can't watch whatever it is. I guess Aaron is supposed to be watching SMW, so I shouldn't bury this idea in general too hard.
Yeah. I mean, I've really failed at that.
Yeah.
Going to say, it's not, it's, you know, they're about as valuable. Because one's old wrestling and the other one's old podcast, okay. Not wrestling.
Yeah, hey.
But SMW, not as widely available as like every WWE show that's ever happened.
No, I'm exaggerating. There is, especially, you know, when you break it down and you got all the backstage machinations and insight and stuff, it can be interesting. But
people that just go back sheets, and man.
People that just go back and you know, watch WWF pay-per-views from 2004 or whatever and be like, let's talk about these old matches. I don't understand the necessity.
We will not be doing that here. But although, like,
I'm inviting more grudges to the show, please jump in.
I can't imagine like 10 years from now us being like, all right, here's Double or Nothing 2023, where we just like do that basically. So, so let's everybody forget about this, okay, when that comes. All right. I talked about our Twitter accounts. Subscribe, rate and review. Go to patreon.com/everythingelite and join up. Give us a try this month and it'll be worth it. So join us. We'll have fun. That's it for Mike, for Nate. I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week.